The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, the most anticipated festival in the region, will once again excite audiences with nearly 650 performances September 9th through the 20th. From comedy, dance, and theater to jaw-dropping spectacles across 39 venues all around Rochester. Don't miss amazing performances in the Spiegel Tent, including the world premiere of Cirque du Fringe Claws Out, Shot Sphere, Kids Fringe, and more. And direct from Italy, Sphere, a mind-blowing outdoor spectacle, free at Parcel 5, September 19th and 20th. RochesterFringe.com.
Let's take a minute to talk about Joe Bean Coffee, my go-to for great beans here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador, and I regularly brew their coffee at home. A recent favorite of mine is the natural process Colombian Finca Buena Vista coffee from Edwin Zambrano. This coffee won a 2024 Good Food Award, and I can't help but agree with that assessment. My brews have been full with fruity flavors of pineapple, strawberry, and orange, and each cup has brightened my morning. Next time you need some beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester, or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. For our loyal listeners, save 15% off your next order at joebeanroasters.com with code LUNCHADOR. You can also subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule, and never be without great coffee again. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care. That music means it's time for another episode of Just Can't Not. I'm your host, Chris Lindstrom. This is part of our series of preview podcasts for the ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, happening from September 9th to the 20th in scenic downtown Rochester, New York. Go to rochesterfringe.com to check out all of the events. Get the app so you can get stuff on the fly. And I'm here with a guest. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Taylor Terrance. I am the humor columnist for 585 magazine, and I have turned that into a live show. This will be my third year at Fringe, and it's called Lunatics Lounge Live. It's storytelling, and sometimes it's columns. I'll just read them live, but a lot of times it's just like fresh new essays, stuff like that.
Awesome. And the Lunatics Lounge live events are on Wednesday, September 17th at 7 o'clock, Saturday, September 20th at 6. You can get your tickets at rochesterfringe.com, and these events are held at the Rochester Cinema Theater over at the corner of Goodman and South Clinton. Fascinating place, that theater, with the new seating and everything else. Seems like they're really focusing on comedy this year for the Fringe.
Yes, I did it last year, and that was my venue as well. And I found a lot of people who came had never been there.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of out-of-town guests, and really impressed with the venue. It's nice because they have food and drink service right to your seat. There's a little stage. When I was there, I can't remember how many shows. I think they're doing 7 Fringe shows this year. They might have had more last year, but very quick, efficient, just load in, load out. And I think there was another comedy show last year, too. I'm not sure what the lineup is this year, but yeah, it's a great venue.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. So what I'm kind of interested in, so you mentioned that you're doing humorist columns for 585. How do you define a humorist column versus being, you know, comedic writing or something else? Do you separate humorist from other kinds of comedic writing?
I guess that you could say they're like humorous essays, kind of. It's not really like sketch. I've written sketches. I've written plays and stuff like that. It's different. It's just a different animal. It's essays. They're all taken from real life. It's all stuff that, you know, has happened in my real life. And I just put like a little humorous twist on there, a little like snarky comments and stuff like that. I would say it draws from Dave Barry was a big influence of mine. I used to read him a lot when I was younger. And then there was in Rolling Stone magazine, there was this humor columnist. I don't know if he was technically humor, but he was a columnist. His name was Rob Sheffield. And his stuff would always, it would crack me up. It was very like, you know, very regimented, neatly written, perfect grammar, perfect syntax, but he'd get these zingers in there. And he was, when I would read his stuff, I would think, like, I want to do what he does.
Yeah, because, I mean, Dave Barry to me is, like, one of the, like, notable humorists.
Yes.
And I think when I think of humorist, it is, it's a really a mix of both storytelling, real-life storytelling, and I think of David Sedaris as another, yes, like, notable,
yes,
humorist, where the stories have sometimes poignancy, sometimes tied to real life or family stories. With comedy interwoven, it's not like pure comedy,
right?
But it's a fascinating art that, you know, doesn't seem to necessarily have the same drive as it used to. Often nowadays we see that in one person shows,
right?
Like Mike Birbiglia, where it is comedy, but there's, yes, a lot of real life brought into that, and not necessarily a comedy way, but a comedic way.
Right. I like Mike Birbiglia because it's got like it's a very narrative structure, kind of, as opposed to like just like joke. He's always got kind of a narrative, and his shows will like follow an arc, and then he'll just interject little jokes within them, you know, as part of like telling the broader story. But I wouldn't say he's like, in my mind, I wouldn't say he's like outright comedic, but but there's always like a nice warm feeling when you watch his stuff. And I think that I relate to him a lot in that respect too.
Yeah. Cause I love that. Like when you mentioned Dave Barry, cause it really sounds like this is like one of those, a lot of his books were collections of columns.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And this kind of what this sounds like is like, hey, this is a series of, are these already published, or are these like ones you wrote specifically for this performance?
It's a mix of both. There's a couple, if I've done a couple columns over for the magazine over the last year and I really like them and I think they'll perform well, I will put them in the show.
Mm.
So it's a nice mix of some of those. And then it's also original ones that I've written just for the show. It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I as long as I think what the piece I've written for 585, if I think it will sort of flow with the rest of the show, I'll put it in there.
Yeah. Well, and I find it fascinating because even though like in a lot of ways, like I cut my teeth in like getting into food and drink by writing.
Right.
I realize in retrospect, I hated the process of writing.
Yeah.
It wasn't for me. It was always a bit of a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you found as like you enjoy writing? Is that something you've always enjoyed doing? Or is it something that this is the venue I like to portray these stories in typically?
I think I really love writing. It's, again, I agree though, it is a fight. Like, you know, when I'm in the middle of it, I'm like, I'm never gonna finish this. It's gonna take me forever. Like, why do I do this to myself? But I just like the process of like, when I write this show, a lot of times I'll go to the library because there's no distractions there. And it's nice to just like, you know, I'll start writing and 2 hours have gone by. It's a nice, I can get lost in like doing the process of it, but it is a process. It's very, I heard this quote once, and it said that writing is labor of the mind. It's, you know, no different than like a labor job, but you're doing it in your head. And I was like, yeah, it's so apt.
Yeah, because you're debating everything, right? You're like,
yes,
oh, you're debating flow. And then what is flow? And then you're thinking in your head, you're overthinking every choice. And I know some people who are what I would consider natural writers,
mm-hmm,
where the flow and tone come more naturally. For me, it was always, everything was a fight. Because if I'm talking, you know, I can pace it right. I can get the tone right.
Right.
You know, I can engage somebody, you know, with certain actions. But writing was always like, I could get my facts out really good, but it's a very different thing trying to grab, you know, trying to grab an audience, trying to get them engaged. When you're, and I love that you mentioned the library, by the way. I know that was a bit of an aside, so take it as such.
Yeah.
What is your library of choice when you're writing?
Right now I go to Brighton Memorial.
Okay.
It's right down the street from where I live. It's got a lot of, it's got like little desks off in the corner where no one will bother you. And that's kind of what I like. I find like if I write at home, there's too much. I can watch, you know, I can put Netflix on, or I could go, oh, let me go do laundry. And it's just, there's too many distractions. And at the library, it's easy to, you know, just, you're in that little box at your desk and you just lock in.
Yeah, and there's people around too. I think for some people, having some people around is actually beneficial, especially if they're not directly involved or where you can't hear them specifically, but you can hear the din of actions. For some people, that makes all the difference.
It's very true because you can kind of hear them, but you can't really see them. It's like a nice white noise, and it makes it easier to concentrate. As a writer, writing's very isolating because you have to do it by yourself. So I find in the library, it's a nice place to like be around people, but not necessarily be with them, which you can't really do when you're writing. So I just started that for this show where I was like, I'm going to try and write at the library and see how that goes. It's going really well.
Yeah, it turns out the library, a great place to learn about things and learn about yourself at the same time.
Yeah. Irondequoit also has a really nice library. I've been there a couple times too.
Yeah, no, the director of the Irondequoit Library is actually hosting a show on the network now with Rory Van Grohl from Ugly Duck.
Really?
Yeah, they're doing a show about their experience in the hardcore music community.
Oh, wow.
And how it affects them as adults and how it's turned them into durable people and the lessons they learned from that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, pretty fascinating. It's a common thread on the Lunch Adore Podcast Network. It's really cool stuff. What I was kind of intrigued with is when it comes to making the choice to actually write for publication in 585, what was the drive to do that? Was that something you've been thinking about? Was it, you know, just something that like, I just want to try? What was your mindset when you said, hey, I want to do this?
It's very interesting. I went to Second City Chicago for comedy writing. And when you do that, it's all sketch.
Mm.
And so it's sort of like it's a different muscle. I really liked it. But I back when I was in college, I had a best friend who was in IT and he set me up with a blog. And that was where I would do a lot more like narrative and like exposition. And I really liked those pieces. And also like my family and friends would read them and be like, you should put these in magazines. They're really interesting. So I wouldn't say magazine was always the goal, but it just became more and more apparent to me after I finished Second City and everything. I was like, I really like still, even though I had the sketch part down, I really enjoyed the essay part and, you know, kind of like introducing the topic or like doing a thesis and then writing it all the way through. And I worked with the editor at 585. She was freelancing at the time and her and I were working on a show together. And then she became the editor and I just pitched it to her and I was like, hey, if you ever want somebody to write something funny or even just do profiles or anything. And she was like, actually you were the first person I thought of. She was like, I was going to ask you if you wanted to do something like that.
That's very heartening, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
And shout out to Christine Green, the editor of 585.
She's the best.
Had a pleasure of doing a collaborative podcast with her and Nick Koziol for That Sounds Terrific in the 585, where we did a show together that got published across both platforms.
Okay. I just did their podcasts in July, I think.
Yeah, and it's a delight, right?
I
love that they're doing that. Shout out to both of them. And then That Sounds Terrifying. In the 585, shout out to Nick Shows and what Christine and Nick are doing over there. I've been really enjoying that. It's
also what I like about that podcast. There's so many interesting people in this area. And they, you know, they showcase a lot of that, you know, people in places you wouldn't necessarily, you know, think to look at. Very nice stuff.
Yeah. And a lot of creatives in Rochester that people don't know that live here. I think there's this bubbling undercurrent of like national level creatives that people have no idea live in Rochester. And I think they kind of like it that way in many ways.
I have to say when I came back from Chicago, I had to leave Chicago because I had no more money. So I came home and I thought my life was over. Like I was just like, oh, I'm back in Rochester. And little did I know that there's so much going on here. And it just, you know, little by little, I just kept submitting to things. And then I got involved with the magazine and now I do Fringe. And it was just like every corner I turned, there was more and more creative people. And I'm like, before I left, I had no idea any of this was here. It's really interesting.
Well, it's kind of a fascinating thing, too. I think a lot of people do require the separation to see Rochester differently.
Yes.
'Cause it's a lot of it is really knowing yourself more than it is knowing Rochester.
Right.
'Cause when
I know a lot of people, and I had the luxury, like, I came to Rochester for school.
Right.
And stuck around after. Not that I'm that far away. I grew up in the Buffalo area.
Right.
But I came here and it was different. And it felt like, you know, something I could grab onto that was separate from where I grew up.
Right.
But for the people that lived here, you know, growing up, you know, there's this, you know, apathy you have, especially as a younger person from where you grew up. And, you know, there's this romance of, oh, the big city is going to offer everything. It's going to show me who I am. And that's partially true. But in the end, what it is no matter where you are, you're there. It reminds me of a Saturday Night Live sketch that Adam Sandler did. He was talking as a travel agent, mm-hmm. where he was telling the travelers, like, you know, I will take you on a trip to Rome, but I can't tell you that you're going to enjoy walking around,
right.
or that you're going to enjoy seeing yourself in pictures. That doesn't change because you're in a beautiful location.
Right, right.
You know, it's, you can be happy wherever you are and you can be miserable wherever you are. It's really a function of you knowing yourself and taking advantage of everything that's around you. Yes, big cities, there's this, you know, waterfall of everything going on, but everything's right. harder to get to and more expensive, and opportunity is different here than in Chicago.
That's exactly how I felt when I moved back here. Like, it took me, and I was never like apathetic and didn't like Rochester.
Yeah.
But once I left in Chicago, or I lived there for 2 years and I came back, and it wasn't until I came back when I realized, you know, what a great place Rochester is, because you have all the access to things that they have in big cities, all the opportunities, events, you know, social outings, but you can get to them because in Chicago, it's a 45-minute train ride, or it's at least an hour sitting in traffic. And here, for me to come back, it was so liberating to be able to just get in my own car. In 20 minutes, I'm at whatever friend's house I want to be at, whatever movie we want to see, a play, that, you know, plays, musicals, all that stuff. It's so close and it's so accessible. And I didn't appreciate any of that before I left and found out how hard it is to do some of that in bigger cities. And I've had friends who lived in New York saying the same thing. Like, it's, you know, you're on the subway all day. And so just the instant, you know, being able to be somewhere instantly. And in this city, wherever you want to go, 20 minutes, you can be there.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, the financial availability of things. Yep. And yes, obviously things are getting harder for people at, you know, at lower income levels. And not that it's been easy, but it's getting harder and harder. But it's a different scale than it is in Chicago and New York.
Yes.
And like, hey, the fact that, like, hey, we're sitting in a broadcast studio in my house.
Right.
Like, right. It's impossible to do that when you're living in a 600 square foot apartment in Chicago.
Yeah.
Right. It's impossible to have that opportunity. What I'm kind of intrigued with, you mentioned Second City. Were you really purely focused on writing when you started doing that? Or how did you balance? Were you always just writing, or were you performing as well?
When I was there, I only wrote.
Interesting.
I intended, if I stayed there, I was going to start the improv track and start performing. Mm. I didn't love it, but it was just something I thought I should learn and like a tool that I should have. So I had intended to do that. But when I remember in one of our classes, we went around and we all introduced ourselves, and I was the only one who was just a writer. They were all doing writing and performing. Mm. And I told the teacher, like, I'm just here for writing. It's, you know, it's what I love. That's what motivates me. I'm not so much motivated about the performance side of it. And so when I was in Second City, that's what I focused on, was writing. And it's interesting because it wasn't until I came back to Rochester that I started like performing some of my essays and doing them in a performance space. And so it was almost like my performance side didn't really take off till I came back to Rochester. It wasn't something I had even considered in Chicago.
Oh, it's interesting, because I imagine that had to be refreshing for them to hear somebody just like, oh, yeah, I just kind of want to do the writing side.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's, you know, there's this, again, when we're talking the romance of certain things, right? When
right.
The romance of improv is, you know, the opportunity to be visible, to be this, to be that. I love that was your focus, was, hey, I just want to be behind the scenes. I want to make this great stuff.
Yeah. And it was very, my one of the teachers that I had about six of them while I was out there. And one of them could tell, she would tell me when I would ask her questions about a sketch or how it was going, she would always say, like, you have a writer's brain. Like, you're thinking about, you know, how the audience is going to perceive this and all that stuff. And she was like, the performers don't really, you know, their job is to just get out there and go. And she was like, whereas you're very like, you know, the mechanisms are always working in your head. And it's a very extroverted thing, and I'm not really an extrovert. So it didn't really appeal to me at all. I was begrudgingly going to do it. Like it wouldn't have been my first choice, but I was like, I'll probably have to do this at some point. So it wasn't my main focus, but it's been very interesting to see how much performing I've done in Rochester, even though that was never really my goal. So I get a nice balance between the Fringe show and the magazine. I get to do a little bit of both.
Yeah. Are there performers that you see and you're like, oh, that's the kind of lane I think I would have ended up in if I was a performer?
Every now and then there are some I'll see on TV. A lot of on television, SNL, certain shows, a lot of little bit parts, it's actually the writers who are taking those parts.
Mm.
And I'll see, and it'll be like, you know, it'll be a big doctor's office and the show's all about what, you know, what goes on in the doctor's office, but they'll have one little receptionist and she'll come on like once every five episodes, give a couple of like killer lines and that's it. And those parts are usually filled by writers. And I always, when I see one of those, I always think like, if I had to perform in a show, that's probably, that would be my lane.
Yeah. I mean, it's very much like when you watch, if you watch like SNL from the early 90s,
mm-hmm.
You'll see, every so often, Bob Odenkirk pops up,
yep.
Or Dave Attell pops up.
Conan O'Brien is in a couple of sketches, too.
Yeah.
Like he's in one with Wayne Gretzky where he's a drummer, and he's way behind. You know, and nobody knew who he was at that point. But, yeah, that's what they'll have little, you know, the writers will fill those roles.
Yeah, and I always loved seeing those because, I saw some of those a little bit later when I knew who those people were.
Right, right.
And I see those, I'm like, oh my God, that's Dave Attell, that's Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah.
You know, one of the best comedic writers of the last 30 years, one of the best stand-ups. And then you're like, oh, yeah. And then eventually you'd start to see like Mulaney and those kind of people pop up, you know, and Seth Meyers before he was Seth Meyers.
Yep.
You know, it was, and it's always great to see that because, yeah, I care about making everybody else the star and I care about doing that. And then they pop up occasionally, but it's a great lane to be in. I think
it's also very interesting when I was at Second City, right along those lines, they would hand us scripts when they were teaching us certain lessons and they would assign each writer a part and we would have to read them out. And then we'd like break them down and, you know, construct what worked and what didn't and all that. And then right at the end, they would say like, Stephen Colbert wrote this when he was here.
Yeah.
Or like Steve Carell wrote this when he was. So they were, the training center is totally different from the actual main stage. But when those guys were on the main stage, they wrote their own scripts. And that's what they used to teach everybody. So same idea. But just because I have that writer's brain, I know who all the writers are. So when they pop up, I'll be like, oh, that's so-and-so who writes for, you know, and nobody knows who I'm talking about. But, you know, I do.
Do you have somebody that is kind of your, like, the comedic writer inspiration?
The biggest one is Tina Fey. I went to Second City, I read Bossy Pants, her autobiography, and it basically served as like my manual for how to go to Chicago because she talked about the neighborhood she lived in, like where she went looking for a job, all that stuff. So I kind of used that as my, I didn't know anybody in Chicago. I just moved there cold. Me and my sister moved and I remember when we were looking for apartments, I was like, Tina Fey looked in this apartment, you know, this neighborhood. So let's go there. So she's my, not only in terms of that, but also just like the intelligence of her writing. And it's sort of, it's timeless. Like, you know, no matter if she's writing, you know, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
So she's probably my top in terms of like sketch SNL writers. She's my favorite.
Yeah. And then I think, you know, you can also see, you know, the growth over time too, you know, to 30 Rock with where she was a performer, but also, you know, the speed of all the jokes on there. And
yes.
Then you can see even like something like Mean Girls, right? Which had heart, but also has that same sensibility. And I love that you can see so much diversity from one person's mind, you know, through those different, you know, editions of her career.
Right, right.
It's just very, very fun to see.
Yeah, and what I like about her is she sort of always keeps me striving because she'll think of something and I'll be like, that was brilliant. Mm. But I never get like intimidated by it. I always get like, you know, if I work harder, I can, you know, maybe I can get to where she's at.
Very cool. So before we get to closing out, I want you to tell people where people can find your humorous columns and, you know, where people can support you otherwise, other than the Fringe Show.
So I have my column. It's my column's at the back page of every 585 magazine. You can get 585 in stores. Wegmans carries them. Tops, I want to say Target and maybe Barnes & Noble, I think. The trick is, though, you have to look where the newspapers are. They don't sell them, like, with all the magazines. Because I've made that mistake going to Wegmans and, like, I can't find this. But it's right up front where all the newspapers are. So you can get them there. My column is always on the back page. Or if you're not, like, a physical magazine person, you can go online. I think it's 585magazine.com. And they actually just uploaded this month's issue today. And they have, you can look up archives, you can look at the current issue, and they have, so that's where you can find my stuff. But just to shout out 585 in general, really good writers, really good, some of the topics and like the places they explore, it's a really nice, cultural celebration of the culture that we have in Rochester.
Yeah, and it is 585mag.com. And you can search for Taylor Terrence on there and find all the articles. What I kind of wanted to finish off with was, what's the topics you like to write about most? Do you have like a through line that is carrying most of your writing, or do you kind of bounce around?
I can bounce around if I have to, but the one, like, my tried and true thing I always write about is my ridiculous family. They're just, I would say in that respect, it's a lot like David Sedaris, where you just, you know, you read these stories and his families, they sound insane.
Yeah.
And it's the same, you know, cause all families are insane. So, and I think that's
no doubt.
That's what, it's relatable to everybody cause everybody's got a family. And so I write a lot about that. My sister, I write about my sister, my parents. My first Lunatic's Lounge actually came from the first column I ever wrote. I was writing about my mother's kitchen because my mom's a big cook, a great cook, and she has all these special recipes. But at the very end, and she has to tailor all these recipes to all us crazy kids. So, you know, certain one doesn't like this, doesn't like that. So at the very end, I had said, this isn't Hell's Kitchen, it's Lunatic's Lounge. And then, so now when I think about that, I just like came up with that on the fly, and now it's a column, you know, in every issue, and now it's a part of a live show. And I'm like, man, who would have thought that? I didn't know that it was a little catchphrase and it has legs.
What a perfect transition to the close of the show. check out Lunatic's Lounge Live September 17th at 7, September 20th at 6 p.m. at the Rochester Cinema Theater, corner of Goodman and South Quentin. You can go to rochesterfringe.com to get your tickets. Tickets are $10. You know, support a great local place, support a great local writer. Anything else before we close out?
Nope, I think that's it. Don't just go see my show. Go see all the Fringe shows. I saw about 7 or 8 last year, and they're all great. It's so inspiring to see all the creative people we have in this city.
Yeah, and that's awesome. And people can also check out the Lunchadors show, which is being held at the downtown branch of the public library, September 13th at 3 p.m. This is a free show. Since it's at the library, we want to make sure it's free for everybody. We're going to have 6 of our different hosts from the podcast talking in different segments, and the hosts will not know what they're talking about until they start. So it's going to be a fascinating, hopefully not a train wreck, but if it is, you want to be there for it. And thank you for staying. Thank you for tuning in for all of the Fringe Preview podcasts, and we'll be back with more Just Can't Not.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.